This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Konnichiwa, friends. This is episode number 96 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are coming to you. We always seem to record on days where there are these really clever holidays taking place. Like last week, it was National Nap Day, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Today, it is International Day of Happiness. Are we feeling happy at all?
I'm pretty happy.
I would agree.
Chris is like, not even close.
Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah. It's funny. I didn't get much sleep last night because I had a case of the feelings because they recently tripled my hormones. And so I was actually crying after midnight this morning. I wasn't sleeping because I was very emotional. And I remember just kind of angrily going through all of my apps looking for some sort of comfort. And I remember going on Twitter and seeing the trending topics and seeing International Day of Happiness, and I'm just sobbing in my bed. And I was like, I don't feel very happy. It just felt terrible. And I was predicting that my entire day would suck. And I was like, you know, wouldn't that be ironic if my whole Monday was terrible on International Day of Happiness? But I'm happy to be recording with you all. My day ended up not being terrible. And so we're going to definitely try to make the most of it and maybe make some other people happy too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of making people happy, Modern Masters 2017 came out, and I understand that some of you had the opportunity to play with it this weekend. So, Hallie, why don't you kick us off, and how did it go?
Sure. So, I was pretty happy today because I started my new job at Card Kingdom. That was pretty awesome. And so, I started my new job. My birthday is in 10 days, and so I thought, okay, I should have a Modern Masters draft. This seems like a good opportunity to celebrate some things. So I bought a box of Modern Masters and got a bunch of friends together. We all drafted. It was super fun. I tried to draft a blue-black control deck, but my friend sitting next to me had first picked a Cruel Ultimatum and went pretty hard into that archetype. So I ended up with more of like an Esper mid-range Flyers deck. There are a whole bunch of pretty decent blue and black Flyers in the set. I had a couple of Mist Ravens, which is a card that I really like. It's very similar to Mana War, which is a card I've played a lot in Limited. It's basically... What? I like my creatures with ETB effects.
Hey, I'm all about consistency. I am not mad.
So I got a couple Mist Ravens. I got... I always forget how to pronounce the name of the card. I think it's Moroi. It's the 4-4 flyer from Ravnica. Like, original Ravnica, that it's a 4-4 flyer for 4, but you lose a life every upkeep. And that was pretty good because it's just bigger than a lot of the other flyers in the format. I got a Tower Gargoyle, which I was splashing white for. I had some decent removal. I had Dinrova Horror, which is also a really sweet card that, you know, balances a creature and makes your opponent discard a card. So I was pretty happy with my deck. I went 2-1. And the deck that I lost to was really sweet. My friend Nick drafted basically like an ETB effects deck. It was Bant. He had 2 Rocks War Monks, which are also pretty cool. And he had, I think the card is called Mist Meadow Witch. It's the 1/1 for 2 that has the activated ability for 2 and a white and a blue. And it lets you exile a creature. And then return it to the battlefield on the next end step. So once he had enough mana, he was just making it so I could never attack him profitably. And he would consistently, like, he consistently had the card in both games and consistently had mana open for it. So it was a really difficult game for me to win. It was a lot of fun. I always enjoy playing against him, and I enjoyed playing against, you know, all the folks that I played against. Like, one of my friends had a really sweet red-white aggro deck with Sky Knight Legionnaires, which was a card that I enjoyed playing. It was printed in the original Ravnica block, but I enjoyed playing it because it was reprinted in Gatecrash. So that was really cool. And yeah, it was just a really great experience. I think the 3-0, I think, was my friend David. He drafted a Jund deck, and I basically called his deck, like, Standard when I first started playing Standard, because he just opened these ridiculous rares. He had, like, Hellrider, Desecration Demon, Mizzium Mortars, just all kinds of really good cards, and just, like, a lot of aggressive black and red creatures, and I think he was splashing green for a couple just, like, value creatures or, like, Putrefy, something like that. But yeah, it was really sweet. It was a really cool format. I feel like I still need to learn the commons and uncommons of the set a bit more. When I was looking at the spoilers, I was mostly just gawking at all the awesome rares that I remembered playing and being really excited about it, and I didn't really take the time to actually, like, look through the full spoiler and think about, like, what archetypes there are in the draft. And so, you know, it comes out on Magic Online this week, and I'm looking forward to drafting it a lot and really digging into the format.
Good, good. And Katie, you got the opportunity to play as well, yeah?
Yes, I did a sealed. I'm going to tell you guys some cards I had in my deck, and then I want you guys to tell me what record you think I ended with. It was four rounds, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, so I had two Sky Knight Legionnaire, a Sensor Splicer, a Gore Clan Rampager, Centaur Healer, Woolly Thoktar, two Unflinching Courage, two Core Skyfisher. Those are just, like, some of them. And then I had, like, some removal, Madcap Skills, Banishing Stroke. So pretty decent Naya deck. What do you guys think about that?
I'm going to give you a 2-2.
Okay.
I'm going to be a little more generous. I'm going to give you a 3-1, because that deck sounds really sweet.
All right.
I'm going to say that you went all the way.
I feel like Chris was deciding between, like, 0-4 or 4-0. So I ended up going 1-2-1.
No!
Which, yeah, it was. And I had some pretty decent fixing. I think I had three on color. I had, like, two Guild Gates and then one of the Tri-Land that were all on color. And I had an Arid Mesa. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I felt like my land base was pretty good, and I've definitely played much riskier, more color decks. but I don't know, the lands were not there for me all day. And then the guy that I drew against was, I think, a newer player. He kind of got flustered easily, and he is very expressive with his face. And every time I, like, played something he didn't like, he was like, and he would just, like, throw his hands up in the air like it was the worst thing in the world. And he ended up drawing at least one or two more times in the day. So I was, like, trying to retrospectively be like, was I playing slow? Like, maybe I was thinking for too long. But I don't think the draw was on me, really. But yeah, I just had bad, like, land colors, and I didn't really play any doubles of any color besides the 2/4 reach spider. But it was like every time I needed one mountain, I just did not have one mountain or one of the other colors. And so the lands really got me. I made just like a couple play mistakes, but I didn't think it was anything huge. My impressions of the set are that even though I didn't draft it, I feel like I would not enjoy drafting it as much as some of the previous Modern Masters. And I say that because I feel like with some of the previous Modern Masters, it seemed like there was really fun but defined archetypes that you could tweak around a lot. Like when you drafted, like, Red-White Giants or the Black-White, what are those little guys called that were all, like, 1/1s and you could search
the spirits?
For them. Were they spirits?
Oh, you mean the rebels?
The rebels, yes. I couldn't remember what faction it was. I feel like all of those were super fun to draft, but just playing sealed with this Modern Masters, it kind of felt more like a core set sealed, if that makes sense. Like a very high-powered core set. because, like, all the cards were awesome, but a lot of them just felt maybe, like, the draft wouldn't be as fun. I don't know. Not that it wouldn't be fun, you know, at all. I'm sure I would definitely enjoy drafting it. But my impression of the set overall was just that it wasn't as cohesive for a draft format. So, Hallie, I'm eager to see what your testing this weekend comes up with. Because, you know, maybe upon drafting it, you'll find out something different. But my deck was really fun to play. I really liked flyers in this set, as per usual. They're always good in limited formats. I had the card Banishing Stroke, which is a miracle card. Definitely drew it probably 2 to 3 times without even, like, and then being like, oh, I miracled this. Wow. That's
it's
nice.
It's a miracle if you remembered.
Yes. Took me a little while to get back in the groove, but, yeah, it was a good time. I learned also some new board games while I was at my local game store, so it was a good weekend overall.
It's funny that you mentioned having a hard time, like, finding the right mana, because if I understand it correctly, Hallie, you opened one of every fetch.
Yeah, my box contained one of every fetch land.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. I was surprised, too, because I was, you know, we were seeing a lot of the cards go around. Basically, like, when I bought the box, I told everyone, hey, you know, this is my box, I'm keeping all the cards afterwards, hope everyone's okay with that. Just for full disclosure. And so I like to do that just because there's no incentive to rare draft then. Like, it seems like it's a little more equitable that way. And so I was seeing all the fetch lands go around, like, pack one. It was like, oh, there's a Marsh Flats. Cool. I guess I'm getting that. And then the second pack went around, and I was like, oh, an Arid Mesa. And they just kept coming. And By the end of the draft, when I was laying out, like, all the high value cards, I was like, okay, well, I got a Snapcaster, I got a Blood Moon, and I got these three fetch lands. And then someone was like, no, here's a fourth one. Here's a Scalding Tarn. And I was like, oh, I didn't know there was a Scalding Tarn. They just kept coming, and it was really funny. But it is strange to see how all the cards have declined in value. I know, Chris, you were saying that, like, Blood Moon is, what, like, $25 now?
Yep, I'm so happy.
Yeah.
I pulled a Blood Moon.
Yeah, I've been seeing Feline Longmore has been tweeting these financial, almost like these graphs, if you will, like the stock market and, like, you know, the stock of the cards that didn't get reprinted have only been going up. And, you know, the ones that have been getting reprinted have been sort of slowly going down. And she took a picture of the fetch lands. And I think you can get, like, Misty Rainforest for, like, $35 now, which is fantastic because they used to be upwards of 60 or 70. Scalding Tarns, I think, are down to 50. And so it seems like right now, it's doing its job of, you know, making cards more accessible. Even Serum Visions, like, I went to get a playset of the new ones because I really like the art on them, and I think they were like $1.50. Nice. And I remember when I first bought my Serum Visions for Ad Nauseam, I paid like $9 a piece, and I was like, they've come a long way.
Mm-hmm. Another, like, unfortunate thing that happened: Anthony came to play in the same sealed tournament, and we were sitting next to each other about to build our decks, and he's like, hey, you want to trade a pack? And I was like, sure, like, I don't really believe in all that fate and luck and stigma around packs. And so we both opened the packs that we traded, and I opened, like, nothing, and he opened a foil Marsh Flats, and I was like, damn you. I should have believed.
See, that's when you need to be one of those couples where you're like, sweetie, and I feel like we're at that point in our relationship where we should merge our collections, you know? Like,
and you just give me that, and I keep everything. Great.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you also did something exciting this weekend. You went to your judge conference.
I did. It was a lot of fun, and I'm really, really glad that I went. The person that put on the judge conference was Blake Smith, my judge mentor. So he had invited judges from the area and then also some L0s that were aspiring to become L1. So it was a mixed bag of different levels. And that was kind of nice so that you would have someone that had a lot more experience than you did, and then people that were on the same level. So it was nice that it wasn't just like everyone was like L2, like at the highest maybe, and there was just little old me. So that was nice. We kind of had a schedule laid out where we were going to have different people talk about different topics, and Unfortunately, our regional coordinator was ill and was not able to make it. So someone else ended up doing his presentation where they were talking about introduction to investigations and stuff like that and how to deal with players that are a little disgruntled about the situation. Or
why are
how
you looking
to...
at me when you say that?
And trying to, like, maybe... you know, come between two players if you need to, and, you know, how you should go about gathering information before you go and kind of make your case to these players. So that was very interesting, especially because I have no experience in that, so it was good to hear from people that definitely have more. Then we also, Carl, who is our area captain, he was supposed to do something on layers, but that ended up getting scrapped at the last minute, so he ended up talking about... a lot of stuff with triggers, which was nice. So I'm, like, taking notes on the back of my judge flashcards, being like, oh, yeah, this thing about triggers. And so that was very informative. So I learned definitely a lot more about triggers than originally I knew. And then Ben Lurie, who has been kind of tag-teaming with Blake, working with me, did... a section where he talked about large events, applying for them, what your expectations can be, and kind of went over how to do your cover letter, your about me section on judge apps and other stuff, and, you know, not to be discouraged if you get turned down for an event, and also not to be like too like with the rubbins to other people if they didn't get it but you did type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that was really nice. The sample cover letters he made were quite funny because they were all based off of Magic cards. So you have like Asperia, like applying to judge an event and kind of saying their street cred and just talking about how you should really keep this to like 100 words because someone's not going to have time to read something that's like a book. And I know that Max Kahn, who he's now part of Northwest, but he still claims Central. He was saying that he's read apps that were like 500 words. And it was like, wow. Who has all that time when you have, you know, a whole mass of like applications to read? So it was kind of mind blowing. So that was definitely informative for when I start to apply for higher level events and kind of what to expect and how to be able to sell myself to someone that is a tournament organizer or who's ever going to be running everything. And then Max did a very delightful, game show that was called So You Think You Can Judge, and it was really fun. And the first thing he said, he's like, how many of you watched So You Think You Can Dance? And like two people raised their hands. Like, it's nothing to do with that. It's not gonna be anything like that at all. So we're like, okay. So it was split up into different sections. The first one was all about communication, and after each task that we would do, he would be like, why do you think we did this exercise? So I had to go into the other room with Max, where he would present us a situation, show us a board state, and we would have to take all the information that we felt was pertinent, pass it on to the second person, and the second person would have to pass it on to the third person, who in turn would go and tell Max this was the information, and he would ask a series of questions based on the information that we gave him. So you didn't know what was entirely important and what wasn't. So I was like, I'm writing down everything. So we ended up finishing... first for that one, which was nice. So I'm like, yes, we have good communication skills. And then there was like a magic trivia section that like some of that I was like, I have no idea. Like one of the questions was like, how many printings are there of Birds of Paradise?
Oh, God.
And for those who don't know, it's 16.
Wow.
And I'm just like, what? Like, yeah, it was just mind blowing. I'm like, wow, that card is imprinted quite a bit. So there was that. And then we did handling different situations that would arise where, like, a judge would have to intervene. So we did little skits. So the one that my team did was about someone intentionally drawing extra cards at FNM to cheat. So I was working with Justin Brinkman, and he's casting, like, a Sphinx's Revelation in my end stuff. I'm like, okay, it's fine. So he draws a bunch of cards. I'm like, hey, wait, how many cards do you have in your hand, judge? So it was quite funny, and, like... at one point, Carl's like, so do you think your opponent's a scummy cheater? I'm like, absolutely. He's like, I'm sorry. He's like, but did you draw these cards intentionally? He's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I did. I was like, who would ever admit to this? So that was quite funny. So it was just a bunch of little practice exercises and stuff, and all of them were super important, and I like that it was done in a way that was really engaging. It wasn't like someone just spouting information to you. So I really appreciated that Max was able to put something together like that. After all of the presentations and everything, I got to take my judge test after I did my interview, so which was very impromptu, and I was like, I was expecting something different, but this is fine. So I did my test. Unfortunately, I didn't pass. I missed it by 3 questions. I was very disappointed, but now that I've had some time to kind of reflect on it and even making new notes for myself, I still think that I was prepared to do the test, but not nearly as prepared as I probably should have been. And there's definitely things that I want to work on within the next 2 months before I take my test again so that I can pass it this time and hopefully just like more than pass. So I'm confident that I can pass it the next time around. I'm really glad that I did it so that I would have the experience to be like, well, even though I failed, I kind of know sort of what's expected now. I know the areas I need to work on. And I actually have people that are working with me to be like, we want to get you there. We know that you can get there and we want you. We want you to be a judge. And so that was really nice afterwards to have all the judges be like, we do want you to be one of us. We were going to go out for a judge dinner, but I was like, nah, I'm not going to go. That was kind of in my feelings. And I felt like really stupid after like crying to like Ben and Blake, be like, I didn't want to do this so badly. So I ended up going and meeting up with Aaron, and we had dinner, and it was wonderful, and we got to see a drag show, and that made up for all the bad feelings. And I really hope to attend more events like this, because I like going to events, obviously, to play Magic, but because the judge aspect is really important to me, I definitely want to be able to learn from other judges, do networking, those type of things. So it was a really awesome experience. I know they did a conference the next day in Chicago, but I was like, I can't. Like, there's too much going on right now.
You're judged out.
Yeah. Even though I go pick up Aaron, I'm like, I'm listening to Judge Cast, like a masochist or something. So I'm already working diligently. I'm going to make new flashcards. I'm going to keep on talking to other judges and working with my mentor so that we can get there, because it is really super important to me, and I really hope to be judging with the best of them soon.
Cool. I do want to fix something, though. I don't consider there were 25 questions, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. I don't consider, you used the word failed. I don't consider 3 wrong out of 25 a failure, my friend. And I don't consider someone who makes podcast recordings of their own voice, reading judge information and listening to it before bed, I don't consider someone who does that to be a failure. So don't be so hard on yourself.
I agree. Know.
It's hard. I'm just like, damn it, I want it so bad. It's like, it's right there.
I failed my L2 the first time I took it, and I remember, like, going, well, I barely remember going over the questions afterwards, and then Brooke was like, how'd you do it? And I was like, I failed, and I just, like, started sobbing in the middle of this, like, Grand Prix hall, and I was like, I need to leave here. But I totally know what it feels like, but I also think that once you take, like, the real test, like we both have, you have such a better idea of what is, like, expected of you, because for those of you that don't know, there's these practice tests you can do online, and they kind of have, like, some similar questions, but it's, like, until you do the real thing, you're not going to know, you know, exactly what it's like. And then once you do, you're like, oh, that's what I was supposed to be learning. And then it gets so much easier the second time around. So I know you'll crush it next time, Chris.
I hope so. And actually hearing that other judges that are L1s, L2s, L3s are like, yeah, I failed my L1 or my L2 like once, twice, maybe even 3 times, you know, before they got it. And so I feel less bad about not getting certified this weekend and just have been trying to look at it as a learning experience. I hate to like sound like really weird about that, to be like, it was a learning opportunity, but it really
was.
So we'll get it, fam. I promise.
I also think it's really wonderful, and I don't know if this is typical for the judge program, but I think it's really fantastic that every step of the way you've sort of had this safety net where, like, even when you were just thinking of getting into the judge program, you had a slew of judges that, like, sort of descended on you and were like, what can we do? How can we help you? Telling you that they want you to be a part of it. And then when you got to, like, when you started studying, you started getting more involved, you know, you had them sort of, you know, watching out for you and shadowing you. And even when you didn't pass the test, you know, it would have been very easy for them to be like, all right, girl, bye. Like, nice try, you know. But even after that, they were like, you know, we'll come back to you in 2 months. You know, we can do whatever. You know, it seems like every step of the way you've really had people looking out for you. And I think that's fantastic. And, you know, I don't know if that's typical, but I would like to think that that's something that everybody gets to experience. And if they do, you know, I have a new respect for the judge program after that, because that's fantastic. Like, there are so many opportunities for them to, like, have left you or to maybe not give you as much attention, and it seems like they've been just constantly there for you, and I think that's really great.
Yeah, it was especially nice. Like, I'm walking out, like, feeling very dejected, and Blake's like, give me a hug, and I was like, okay. Thanks, Judge Daddy.
I can't believe you call him Judge Daddy. That is not okay. I can't call him Judge Daddy. You can't call him.
It was his idea, not mine.
Not okay. But yes, I'm very proud of you, and I look forward to you passing your test, because I know you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
So this past weekend, there were also some GPs, a couple GPs. One happened in Brazil and one happened in Japan. I want to talk about Japan for a second, because I know we sometimes talk about, like, what it's like to, what it takes to really win an event. And I just want to talk about this young man. So he follows Owen Turtenwald. His name is Ryohi Carino, and he's a big fan of Owen Turtenwald. He saw that Owen Turtenwald was playing a Mardu Ballista deck, and he thought, this might be fun. I'll totally take this to a GP. But he decided to take Mardu Ballista to his first GP, and then just won. Who does that? Who takes a deck? Who finds a deck that they don't even know that well, goes to their first GP, and then just wins? Like, who does that?
Team Zero Games. Team Zero Games. We're coming
Fantastic.
Around.
Fantastic. I've never seen this before. Like, I've seen people have, like, top eighted their first GP or whatever, but this young man just made it look so damn simple. And so, shout out to Ryohi. It was really neat watching him play, and I just thought that was such a great story to tell. No big, just first GP, you know, whatever. So Standard was the format, one of the formats this weekend, and Saffron Olive wrote a wonderful post the other day talking about the face walker problem, specifically with regard to Standard, and was talking about how there's been a lot of discussion lately about what exactly is wrong with Standard. You know, we've talked about how the format seems to feel really stale. You know, any time that there's innovation, it doesn't really seem to last. We didn't see any new bans to try to help out with it, and even then there was a discussion about whether or not bans were the answer. And Saffron's kind of taking a different approach here. You know, he's suggesting that maybe the problem is coming from a design standpoint, which I know some people have speculated on, and he kind of narrows the focus a little bit and says that the problem is really with the planeswalkers, and that, you know, we have sort of turned into this sort of Avengers type cast, you know, and because of that, and because Wizards really wants to turn this into, like, a movie and merchandise, we are stuck with these planeswalkers, and in order to have them be these visible characters, you have to make the cards good, and that's a real problem. When it comes to the format, and he talks about how problematic Gideon is and Saheeli and things like that. And, you know, Hallie, what do you think about this? Like, do you think there's any merit to this concept of, like, the facewalker problem? You know, do you think the planeswalkers, you know, have more of the guilt, you know, put on them for this?
I think it's at least partly a planeswalker problem. You know, as Saffron said in the article, you have to make the face cards of your set good in order to sell packs, and that's completely reasonable. Gideon is excellent. I mean, we can even lump Emrakul into this category. Emrakul was kind of the face of Eldritch Moon, and Liliana was the last hope to defeat her, and so the finals of Pro Tour Eldritch Moon came down to a showdown between Liliana and Emrakul, and as awesome as that is, it also shows just how warped a format can be by two specific cards. And We definitely saw that in the bands, and I think at least a good part of it is that the Planeswalkers are really powerful. But I think another part of it, and this is also something that Saffron touches on, is that there just haven't been very good answers to them. And I think we've been in a sort of a standard environment recently where the threats are so good and the answers just can't touch them. I know when Elspeth, Sun's Champion, was in standard, Elspeth was an excellent card, but, you know, she cost 6 mana, and a lot of people were like, oh, she cost 6 mana, whatever. But the format was slow enough that, like, you could play Elspeth, and Elspeth could just win you the game on her own. But that was a format with Hero's Downfall in it, and so, you know, someone would play the Elspeth, make, you know, 3 tokens, and then Elspeth would be gone. And, you know, now we have Ruinous Path, and Ruinous Path doesn't do quite the same thing. We have a lot of these, you know, sorcery speed responses to Planeswalkers. Like, instead of Hero's Downfall, we have Ruinous Path. Instead of Lightning Strike, we have Incendiary Flow, or whatever the card is called. And it's, you know, it's just a different environment. And I think if there were more answers to Planeswalkers, or more universal answers like that, you know, enchantments that can target Planeswalkers, that kind of thing, I think we'd be in a very different place.
Katie, what do you think?
I would... When I read this article, I was like, he's so right. I don't know. I feel like Saffron Olive should really be offered a job at R&D, because I think he nails a lot of problems on the head. But it really got me thinking to back when I started Magic. I started around M13, which was right before Return to Ravnica came out, and right around the time of Innistrad. And I was thinking back to the decks, and I was trying to, like, remove my bias, because when you fall in love with Magic, I mean, everybody really falls hard for it for at least a little bit. It's like a new crush. And so I'm trying to remove that new honeymoon phase bias. But the deck that I remember falling, like, super hard for was Bant mid-range, I guess. Which was based on Thragtusk. You could play Angel of Serenity. You could get spicy and play some Deadeye Navigator, but it had, you know, Sphinx's Rev and Detention Sphere and some Supreme Verdicts if you, you know, if the creatures weren't coming your way. And the other big decks were Naya Blitz. There was the black-red, like, Olivia Valdarin Vampire Aristocrat deck. There was a Jund deck that had Bonfire of the Damned and Thragtusk. And all of those decks, as I was thinking about them, were defined not by Planeswalkers, but by really cool creatures and really fun game interactions that weren't involving Planeswalkers. And there were Planeswalkers around. I mean, I think Garrick was a thing, and I think even Liliana was in Standard, if I can remember right.
But I remember Jund, and I remember mm-hmm. I played Standard Jund back in the day with, like, Rakdos Key Rune and Thragtusk, and we ran, like, a Garrick. Like, it was mm-hmm. Garrick Primal Hunter, and it was, like, 1, maybe 2, but it wasn't, like, full playsets like we're running right now with, like, Gideon and Saheeli.
Yeah, and I loved that. That was when, like, I thought Standard was super fun. And I don't know if that's only because of the honeymoon phase or because now it's just, like, well, everybody, like, as soon as a set comes out, it's like, well, you gotta get all the Planeswalkers, like, 4 of each, and then put them in a deck, because that's how Standard turns out. And I think he's got a good point that the Planeswalkers, I think, are making the format more stale. For those of you that haven't read the article, he talks about how the Planeswalkers are good on defense and offense, so mm-hmm. most decks tend to be mid-range, because that's where it fits, and that's the kind of format that it warps it to. And it, he also talks about how you can't play other cards in the format that are just a worse Planeswalker, like a removal spell, but this Planeswalker can do that, so I'm going to play the Planeswalker instead, because there's options, and it also does this thing. I really liked this article. I hope that somebody in R&D is listening, because I think this really nailed what is going wrong with Standard currently. The thing I wanted to touch on was, I mean, I really love how Saffron Olive always tries to give a fix to a problem. He doesn't just bring up a problem and complain about it and then leave it. But I'm not sure that the fixes are, like, super great. He says to make the planeswalkers, like, a little bit worse. And that's not to make them unplayable, and it's not to make them, you know, not face cards anymore, but just a little tiny bit worse, so there's a little bit more room in the set for other kinds of growth. He also talks about cutting back on the total number of planeswalkers to prevent fatigue, so the number of planeswalkers in each set. I highly agree with this. It seems like they're just throwing them out left and right, and they're kind of losing their novelty, at least in my opinion. He talked about making more ways to interact with the card type, because there's not a whole bunch of things that say, like, target planeswalker on it. So it can be difficult to get rid of them once they're already on board. And he talks about how all other cards, creatures, enchantments, etc., have a lot of interactive card types. Like, you can destroy target creature, or destroy enchantment, and do all those things, except planeswalkers. There's only usually one or two niche cards in the format, and that warps it even farther. So some of those fixes I think will work, but I think it's definitely a fine-tuning thing. And I think cutting back is really the most important part of what he said, because I want to get back to those decks that only have, like, one planeswalker and a bunch of really cool creatures. Like, I know a lot of people didn't like Thragtusk, but I love Thragtusk. And I think, you know, that was one of the healthiest standard formats that I can remember, when there was seven viable decks at all time. You could play Reanimator, Jund, Control, Midrange, Naya Blitz, Black Red Zombies. Like, there was a lot of different decks going around. So I think that this is a great article, and I hope that somebody's listening, because I think he's definitely on to something.
Speaking of Thragtusk, there's a young man who goes by the name of Magic Man Sam that makes videos on YouTube that are typically lore-related, and he's been knocking it out of the park lately. He made a video recently about Thragtusk that's literally just 5 to 6 minutes about Thragtusk, and it's fantastic. And so if you're looking to know more about Thragtusk, or just looking for more videos to watch, you should definitely go look him up on YouTube, because he does a really good job. Chris, what do you think about this standard? You know, do you think the Planeswalkers are to blame, or what do you think the answer is?
I definitely do think that they are part of the problem. I do agree with the majority of the fixes that Saffron Olive suggests, because there are planeswalkers that are just too insanely good. And anyone that's running those colors has no reason not to play those planeswalkers, because they can be very oppressive or just an easy answer. I do feel sad when he went over that there are cards that do similar things in the format right now that aren't being played because there are cards that are just better. And I think that that's unfortunate, because especially when they spoil cards like Gisela and being able to make Brisella and stuff like that, who's running that? Nobody. Like, nobody at all. It's like, why would you run that when you can run Gideon? Why would you play Collective Defiance, which I think is a really awesome card? Unfortunately, it's a sorcery. When you could play Chandra Tortured Defiance, I can totally see people's mindset with that, but it does make me sad that there are some cards that could be shining through right now that just aren't. I also agree that there needs to be some way to deal with planeswalkers effectively, because that is definitely something that I miss from previous standards, is having answers for planeswalkers. I agree heavily that Bring Back Pithy Needle is one of my favorite cards ever. Or even, as he suggests, something that is similar to Pithy Needle to deal with planeswalkers. I think that would definitely be a good idea. And there are some people that just love planeswalkers. They just want planeswalkers for days. They don't care about anything else. And then there are some people that don't. Like, one of the things that I enjoy, at least with playing Modern, is I don't really have to deal with, like, any planeswalkers. Like, very, very seldom. It's like, you can name probably two that you're going to see fairly regularly, and one of them is Liliana Adda. So it's kind of just like you're not feeling like you're overwhelmed with planeswalkers. I also miss, even during Return to Ravnica Black, I mean, I played Blue-White Control. There was three planeswalkers that you were running within that, and one of them was in your sideboard. So it's like, yeah, it's nice to have Jace, it's nice to have Elsbeth. They're helping us deal with aggressive decks. They're helping us filter our card draws and things like that. And then we'll board in Big Jace if we don't want to deal with other control shenanigans and just mill the shit out of you. Like, I missed that because it was like there were other powerful cards aside from the Planeswalkers. Could you play those decks without them? Probably. But they were just enhancing the decks. It wasn't like this is going to be all about this Planeswalker. Instead of building a deck that's based on a certain archetype and then being like, oh, this Planeswalker would fit in here nicely. It's just more like, okay, Planeswalkers are going to be the ride or die. And so I understand the points that he makes about Wizards recognizing what their brand is and that Planeswalkers are a big face of that. Hell, they bill the player as a Planeswalker. You are a Planeswalker. So, yeah. Like, I get it. But at the same time, again, there are some people that they're not about Planeswalkers. They want to build cohesive decks that maybe don't need to include them, or maybe just run one or two copies. Not like we're going to jam four of these suckers in here and be like, okay, you came to play. You got it. So I wonder what we're going to see in the coming sets in regard to Planeswalkers, but I'm hoping that someone from Wizards is reading the things that Seth is saying to kind of take them into consideration, because clearly this is not just his opinion, that there are others that do feel this way, and even I've heard it from other friends and people I've talked to that are just like, I don't really see it for Planeswalkers, or I'm not playing Standard because of this reason. And even subconsciously while I was reading this, I'm like, yeah, that is part of the reason I'm not playing Standard, because I just don't want to deal with those types of situations. So I'm hoping that something can be learned from this, and that maybe Planeswalkers can exist in Standard without it feeling like it's too oppressive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the last thing on the docket tonight, our friend Will Jonathan over at Channel Fireball wrote an article recently called Defining Your Success. And we've talked about just about everything he does because it's so relatable. And he was talking about how when certain members of the community were asked what their idea of success was, as people like Matt Tabak, Mark Rosewater, and Randy Buehler, you know, they tended to name things that were not external. So like Mark Rosewater said that he defined success as doing what you love, and Matt Tabak said that he defines success as the amount of fun that you have during the day, and Randy Buehler says that his version of success is thinking about what it is that you care about, what makes you happy, and then doing that and not what everybody else thinks you're supposed to do. And he kind of breaks down, like, you know, some things like start asking yourself this question, you know, in order for me to be successful, what needs to happen, not making success contingent on external things. And then he ends it by saying, what is your own personal definition for success as a Magic player? And I figured I would pose that question to all of you. So, Hallie, what is your personal definition of success?
I've thought about this a little bit, and I have to go back to something that Jadine Comparin said, and I'm not sure, I can't remember if it was on this podcast or when you interviewed her the one time on the Deck Tease, Aaron, but the one thing that Jadine said that really stuck with me was that she aspires to play on her level, and that's something that always sticks out to me when I think about when I was most successful playing Magic. And, you know, I've won many games of Magic in, you know, the 4 or 5 years that I've been playing. But the wins that have felt the best to me were the wins where I felt like I was really firing on all cylinders. And I felt like I was playing on my level and I was exceeding my own expectations for how well I could play the game. And I think that is success to me. Not just playing well, but being able to play your best.
Katie, what do you think success is?
I think that success is very fluid. I feel like every time I go to a Magic tournament or FNM or GP, my definition of success is going to be different almost every day. And I think a lot of it goes to goal setting. Like, if you don't know what's going to make you happy, then it's hard to achieve that. So I think, like, success and goal making are both, they both go hand in hand, and it's really hard to have one in your mind without having the other one also in your mind. And so for a long time, my definition of success was top aiding PPTQs, and then, you know, it moved to being first at a PPTQ or queuing for an RPTQ. For a while, it was to improve at drafting, because I knew that if I improved at drafting, that would make me happier as a Magic player. And recently, it's just been, like, to enjoy playing Magic again. And I think, you know, every single day it's just going to be something different. I don't think there's a concrete definition for success as a Magic player, because I think people try and get different things out of different situations and different tournaments in Magic.
Chris, what do you think success is?
I have wrestled with this probably for the entirety of our podcast. Whether it was goals I wanted to achieve or how I wanted to view myself as a player, and I've definitely struggled. Now I would say that success means to me, at least from a magical standpoint, that what I'm doing, how I'm conducting myself while I'm playing Magic, or even hopefully when I start judging, that it's in a way that makes a difference for someone else, and that I'm having a positive impact, that I'm giving people different perspectives to think about. And it's mostly about how I want to be towards others and to the community. I used to think that maybe 2 years ago that maybe I'd want to be on the Pro Tour someday, that maybe I would want to win a Grand Prix. And not to say that those things still wouldn't be wonderful if they happened. I think I'm just more rooted in this area about taking care of others and trying to make the world a better place. So if I've done even the smallest thing within Magic to do that for someone else, then I have succeeded.
Yeah, I spend most of my time thinking about success in terms of content creation, because that's sort of what I'm known for, and that's the thing that I invest the most time and energy in when it comes to Magic. You know, I spend more time creating content than I do actually playing Magic, and, you know, maybe that's something that will change once our show wraps up. But for now, it is what it is. And so, you know, I tend to think of success in those terms. And for me, success is being able to sort of rest on your laurels. You know, success means that, you know, you kind of see this sometimes with movie stars, where it's like, you know, they first come out of the gate and they're doing movies constantly. Like, they're just chucking movies into the can. And then, you know, after a while, you kind of turn into like an Angelina Jolie, where it's like you can go down to like one movie a year, or like one movie every 2 years. And, you know, unfortunately, success kind of breeds success. And so a lot of times you just feel like you're keeping it going. And so, you know, for me, I think success is when you've reached a point where you can sort of, you know, you can say to yourself, if I'm not doing a show right now, I know that I'll be okay. I know that my reputation will be okay. Like, what I've done will not change. Like, that won't go away. I won't be forgotten. You know, sort of the peace of mind of just knowing that you can sort of stop at any time, and you just don't have to keep going. You know, you don't feel like you have to constantly just remind people what you've done, and you don't have to keep chasing the high. You've sort of reached a point where you know that you've done the best that you can, and everything else after that is sort of gravy, if that makes sense. And so, you know, that's definitely a feeling I've had lately with the show wrapping up, is, you know, I felt for a long time like, gotta keep going, gotta be on the show, gotta guest here, gotta write a blog here, gotta promote, gotta do all these things. And like, I just kind of reached a point where like, I just felt like I had nothing more to prove, where it was like, you can just sort of throw up your hands and be like, what? And to me, that's success. When you can just sort of say, I've done all these things. I don't really need to keep grinding. I'm where I want to be. I'm doing it on my own terms. And I think that's sort of another thing for success, is sort of the freedom, where you can say, I'm making the content that I want. I'm playing the decks that I want. I'm going to the events that I want. I'm hanging out with the people that I want. You know, maybe that's very black mage of me. You know, Mauro wrote about the colors again today, and I was like, God, I'm such a damn black mage. But I think freedom is another thing. I think freedom is another sign of success to me, when you can do all of these things, when you don't have to, when you just don't have to do anything you don't want to. I think, and that kind of bleeds into my personal life too. I'm very lucky that I work a job that I like, and I have the freedom to, if God forbid I didn't enjoy it, I can walk away. You know, I have the freedom to do that. You know, I can wear what I want, be around who I want. And to me, that's a sign of success, when you can just do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show this week? Well, I'm thinking of streaming the Vintage Challenge this weekend. So if you don't have anything to do on Saturday, come hang out with me. The last time I looked at the Vintage standings, I haven't played Vintage in like a month, and Dredge like completely fell off the radar. So I was like, my people need me. And so I may need to go back in there. And I was also surprised that there's a deck that showed up in the Vintage rankings called Jorge Rodriguez. What? Not really sure how you get a name like Jorge Rodriguez, but I'm very interested in that. Did I also tell you that Ojutai is team play in Vintage?
Really?
What?
Yeah, in a blue-white standstill. It's Dragon Lord Ojutai, and I think that is fascinating. So so if you want to come see some of the insanity, you should come hang out with me on Saturday. It should be a really good time, and we'll see what we can. Gush Mentor is the number one deck, so if you like Monastery Mentors and drawing lots of cards, you'll really enjoy watching that, and it should be a really good time.
Cool.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to this show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan, that's H-A-L-C-A-N-S-A-N, and on Instagram and Snapchat also at HalCanSan.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger, that's M-E-A-N-M-U-G-G-E-R, or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. I guess I do have something else, but Hallie and I both competed in the MTG Dogs. Well, we didn't, but Watson and Kirby did. And I think they both made the Elite Eight, but Watson faced Shiro, and those 80,000 followers of Kibler's really pulled through. I think it was like 30-70. I'm not sure who Kirby got... lost to Hal.
He lost to Annie, who is apparently a Tumblr famous teacup Yorkie. So Kirby was ahead for most of the day, and then Annie's human tweeted or posted something about her on Tumblr, and the votes just surged in her favor, and poor Kirby was very disappointed. But I think we were kind of relieved that it was over because I was getting very invested in it and was spending a lot of time just looking at Twitter and like refreshing the polls. And I was very glad to have that weight off my shoulders when he lost.
Were you turning into like a pageant mom where you're like on the side of the stage and you're like, you're prettier than all those girls?
Just a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
Glorious.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at T-E-H-K-R-I-Z. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. If you would like to watch me streaming, I'm hoping to do some of that before this episode comes out, but I will definitely be putting that on Twitter. And my Twitch channel is twitch.tv/tokriz. And you can find me on Snapchat, Cryptic Command with K's. I think that's everything.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAstrus. That's OriginalAstrus. You can email me at OriginalAstrus@gmail.com. I stream 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursday evenings at twitch.tv/OriginalAstrus. You can also find me on Snapchat at OriginalAstrus. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. There's still time to get us your last minute questions before we go. And the show comes out every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. Thank you all so much for spending some time with us, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.